From the Land de Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the summer solstice, the 20th day of June 2012. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson from right here in Champaign, Illinois. And then later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with the folks at the Anderson's Climbers facility in Delphi, Indiana. In today's agricultural news, the Senate has rejected a push to put a $250,000 cap on farm subsidies. U.S. EPA is proposing new air quality standards, and Monsanto is suing DuPont's Pioneer Hybrid International over patent infringements. Dave Dickey will be along in a moment with these and many more ag news stories, and then I'll tell you what U of I agronomist Emerson Nafziger has to say about short corn, short rainfall, and yield potential. Oh, speaking of rainfall, we'll talk with Drew Lerner, World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City. He's putting a little rainfall in the forecast for you, and we'll do that as we finish up this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. From the University of Illinois.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit of Illinois, offering financial products and services specifically for the agriculture industry, including farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing, as well as farm cash management solutions.
Here's how the numbers settled up in Chicago on the last trades at 2 o'clock Central Time at the CME Group. July futures for the soft red winter wheat were up 10.5 cents at the end of the day, $6.60 the settlement price. September at $6.78.5, up 9.5, and December at $7 and a penny and three quarters, up 8.25. Of course, those are all last ticks and not settlements. The hard red July, $6.86.5, up 16.5 for the day. July corn futures at $6.10, down 2.5. September at $5.66.5, down 1. December, $5.64.5, a penny higher. The March corn at $5.75.25 at the end of the day, up a quarter. And May futures at $5.82.5, higher. July at $5.87.25, up a half. And December of next year at $5.56.75, that for the 2013 contract, down 3.25 cents. July soybean futures at $14.43.25, up 9.5 cents. August beans, $14.33, 11.75 higher. September at $14.06.5, up 8.5. And November beans at $13.93.25, up 8.75. The January 13.90.5, up 8.25. And the March contract at 13.50.75, up 6.5. Bean meal futures at $4.27.40, down 50. And the bean oil up 34 at $50.78 on the afternoon. June live cattle at $116.60, down a dime. August at $152.75, and the feeders 85 cents lower. And July lean hogs $94.75. down 35 cents. This is the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures trading at $81.75 a barrel, down $2.28. That's on a 10-minute delay, of course. Ethanol at $2.73, down 3.9 for the day. Natural gas at $2.52 and 2 cents, 2 and 3 cents of a cent lower. And the heating oil at $2.58 and 8 cents of a cent, down 4 and 6 tenths of a cent. Gold futures trading $1,614.80 on the finish, finished $7.40 lower for the day. And the dollar at 81.57. That's up 0.19. CRB index at 272.91, down 4.3. And the S&P at 1351.21, down 6.7. Here's what the weather forecast looks like from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area yet this afternoon. Sunny skies and a high of 91 degrees on a southwest wind at 16 to 18 miles an hour. It'll gust all the way to 25 miles per hour on this Wednesday afternoon. And then mostly clear this evening, a low of 73 degrees for tonight. On a southwest wind at 10 to 16, that'll gust all the way to 23 for the day. Thursday, a 40% chance of showers, a few thunderstorms. Partly sunny, a high near 86 in a southwest wind. Tomorrow, mostly clear, a low of 60, tomorrow night that is, 63 on a northwest wind at 6 to 9. And Friday, sunny skies and 85 degrees. Friday night, mostly clear and 62. Saturday, sunny and 86. Saturday night, mostly clear, mostly cloudy and a low of 67. Sunday, that's when she clears up, mostly sunny and a high of 87. Sunday night, partly cloudy and 66. And Monday, sunny skies and 82 degrees. By the time we get to Monday evening, mostly clear and 59. Sunny on Tuesday and a high of just 80 degrees. We'll talk more about the agricultural weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour and speak with Drew Lerner.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
This is the Wednesday afternoon edition of the Closing Market Report. On the phone line, Jackie Vegas of Stuart Peterson from right here in Champaign County. Good afternoon to you, Jackie.
Good afternoon, Todd.
And well, the close in the corn pit was narrowly mixed, which doesn't happen very often, and I don't think was indicative of what the trade really looked like, because that was pretty narrow for the end of the day.
It certainly was. It was. I think the trade has an awful lot to try and digest. Today was a busy day. We saw all kinds of things going on. You know, we've got option expiration in the July contracts coming up on Friday. You know, in the corn market, the big question on July, of course, is going to be, are they going to hang the $6 puts or the 6/20 calls where all the volume sits? You know, December corn really did a good job today, I think. You know, and it had a nice close, basically up in that 566 area. We haven't seen that since March of this past year, and it's above the 40-week moving average. So, you know, I would expect that we might be able to try and test that 575, which is the 50-week moving average. I think... You know, there's some pollination going on in the south, and the key really for corn, as far as I'm concerned, is pollination. You know, when you look at a lot of people are pretty bowled up because of the topsoil shortages that we have. I think that's more indicative of what's going on with beans than it is with corn right now. But one thing I would like to see people keep in perspective is, you know, if we have to go below 157, which, you know, could possibly happen, on that 95.86 million acres, and that'll give us a 1 billion bushel carryout if nothing else changes. And so, you know, that's still quite a drop from where we are, and it might be early. I think if we get into pollination and we have extremely hot weather, then that's certainly real. But are we going to see the same thing? You and I talked a little bit last week about what happened in May corn, big rally going into the 8th of May, 86 and half cents, and then from the 8th of May to expiration, we dropped 77 and three-quarter cents. I think we might see a similar situation here just because commercials really, really want corn.
Well, if they really want corn, why would it drop so much?
Well, I think it's once they're into that delivery period, they don't have to push for it, and everybody's moved on to the following month as far as what
so
they're pricing off of.
They just take delivery of what they've got on at the board,
right?
Then.
Right, absolutely. That I believe is a big part of the drive for the market right now. You know, when you saw beans today, it looked beautiful and they had a nice close. But I think most of the November is coming out of the dryness and the idea that we might not actually plant as many double crop beans as what they thought we were going to. And I thought it was interesting to see the wheat situation. You know, everybody's going, we have so much wheat, why is it doing this? But the World Bank came out today and actually said that supplies are adequate only for now. They don't see them necessarily being adequate for next year. So a lot of positive underpinning in the market, as well as the great investor enthusiasm that we've seen because the Fed was coming out today.
Right, and then the Fed didn't have a lot to say other than we're not doing as well as we thought we should be, and we're going to kind of hold the line. Or did they say more than that?
Well, I think they said more than that, to be honest with you. You may have to read a little bit between the lines sometimes, but listening to Mr. Bernanke speak, you know, they extended Operation Twist out until the end of the year, gives them more time to buy long-term securities and sell the short-term bonds that they currently have. But, you know, I get the impression, you know, I thought Operation Twist was kind of cute because I think the Federal Reserve feels like, you know, the old cattle rustler in the Old West where they used to hang them from the tree and let them twist in the wind.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of think that's the way the Reserve feels when it comes to Congress, you know, because Mr. Bernanke was very, very clear in the fact that the Federal Reserve cannot cure the problems that are here. They're only a part of the tools. And he even went so far today as to say, I have three commandments for Congress. He said, do no harm that damages the recovery, find a better fiscal path, and use fiscal policy more effectively, like perhaps a better tax code. And he also talked about the fact that, you know, Europe, the housing situation, and all the fiscal risks are what are keeping the financial markets so nervous. You know, they don't like uncertainty. And yet that's not going to change until the state and the local government stop cutting.
I just saw a headline as I was making my way into the studio on Operation Twist. Apparently that came originally from an operation similar in function as what the Fed's doing today during the Kennedy era in the early 1960s.
That's right.
So we'll read more up about that, maybe talk about that a bit later on the program in the coming days. You know, I've got to know whether you think that up at these levels, whether you're a, and usually folks are scale-in sellers, I'm sorry, on rallies. This is a pretty, I don't want to call it a lofty level, but this is up well off of recent lows. Are you a scale-in seller for corn or not?
I am definitely a scale-in seller, but I continue to use option strategies because we just don't know what's going to happen down the road. But absolutely, there's no question. I think it's interesting. Drew Lerner, who you're going to talk to after a while, put out a really good piece today, and he had a map in there that showed the majority, where the majority of the corn is grown in the United States. It actually shows 91%. Anybody who produces less than a half or less than 1% wasn't on the map. But if you took that and you actually laid it over a subsoil map, we're not nearly as bad a shape as we might think we are. And so, you know, we saw quite a bit of moist to adequate areas, and the only places that were what I would call marginal would be a part of Indiana and a part of South Dakota. And so, you know, we have to be careful. You can't hang all your hopes on the idea that this crop is going to fail down the road. You know, you have to be a risk manager, and that means that you do take advantage of scale-up selling.
And when you do it at this point, is there something different about this year? And you just talked about that, but in terms of percentage, so if you would normally have 25 or 30 or 40% of your crop, and you pick the number, sold by the time we get to harvest time, are you cutting that number back so you're wanting to do half of what you normally would, or do you have some kind of advice on that front?
I haven't cut it back at all, Todd, and to be honest with you, I have many clients who are 100% covered between cash sales and option strategies. Now, we did not do as many cash sales this year because of the circumstance that we had, but we brought our sales all the way up. Normally, when you get to the beginning of July, even if we're already in some type of a drought circumstance, you get into the beginning of July and it can be pretty doggone rocky. And so we just told people, hey, we're going to do these option strategies to give you opportunity if the market goes higher and protection if it goes lower. Because like I just read to you from the Fed, we have way too many questions out there in the economies to just feel comfortable. And I thought it was kind of sad, you know, the last few days we've seen the dollar trade lower. Well, today the dollar is trading higher again. And that never helps us in the commodity market.
Hey, thank you so much for taking the time with us.
Thank you.
Jackie Vakes, this was Stuart Peterson, joins us from her Champaign County office here on the Closing Market Report for Wednesday afternoon. You, of course, are listening to Illinois Public Media. If you'd like to hear what Jackie had to say again, you can do that on our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. This one staffing note, I'll be out of the office next week. So Dave will be in the chair as we make our way through that part of the month of June. And for the big acreage reports that come up at the end of the month, too. Speaking of Dave, he's here now with today's agricultural news.
Agricultural news. The U.S. Senate yesterday resoundingly rejected a push to put a $250,000 adjusted gross income means test on people to receive farm program benefits in the Farm Bill. Senators did adopt an amendment that sets a $75,000 cap on marketing loan gains for individuals. By late afternoon, senators also had passed an amendment to provide $150 million in mandatory funding to rural development, including $85 million over 5 years for beginning farmer and rancher programs. Senators rejected an amendment to place further restrictions on the food stamp program. The Environmental Protection Agency has proposed revisions to air quality standards for particulate matter that include both a more stringent health-based primary standard for fine particles and a separate secondary standard to address visibility impairment. The proposed rule would set a more stringent annual health-based primary standard for fine particles, those 2.5 microns in diameter or smaller. As in the past, the proposal makes no mention of regulating dust generated in the course of normal farming operations. Seed company Monsanto has filed a lawsuit against DuPont and its Pioneer Hybrid International unit, alleging infringement of Monsanto patents in seed development technology. The lawsuit, filed with the U.S. District Court for the Eastern District of Missouri, alleges that a Pioneer system used to identify seeds with superior genetics uses technology that infringes on Monsanto patents. The technology is known as seed chipping. DuPont says it believes that the latest suit by Monsanto is without merit. The lawsuit requests an unspecified amount of compensation for damages. A new oil industry study suggests that California's new low-carbon fuel standard regulation could cause up to 7 refineries to shut down, eliminating up to 65% of California's refining capacity by 2020. The study, compiled by Boston Consulting Group, says California refiners could face costs of more than $2.50 a gallon, which likely would get passed through to consumers through prices at the pump. It also concluded the rules could cause the state to lose between 28,000 and 51,000 jobs in the petroleum industry. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. That second program we post to our website at willag.org, that's willag.org, by about 6 o'clock Central Time each and every Friday evening. This week, our guest on the phone line, Tommy Grisafi. You see him on AgWeb quite a bit. He is in DeMott, Indiana, and will join us for Commodity Week. Commodity Week, it's our weekly look at what's been happening in the world of agriculture. Up next, short corn, short rainfall, and yield potential. We'll hear from Emerson Nafziger. Most people think a really good corn crop is tall, and certainly, says University of Illinois Extension agronomist Emerson Nafziger, that has been the case in the past. Still, height is not necessary for a corn crop to be a good one. That's a good thing because this year the Illinois corn crop is likely to be pretty short by the time it tassels.
Theoretically, we could make a full yield with a 6-foot tall crop. Realistically, crops that are that short typically have a little less leaf area, perhaps, and it may be oriented a little bit differently. It's difficult for such crops to intercept full sunlight as well as a taller crop can do. So, all things being equal, shortening the crop by a foot or 2 feet below its normal height of, say, 8 feet, doesn't have to have a large effect on yield. Realistically, the conditions that brought it to that may lower the yield potential a little bit.
Things that can cause a corn crop to be shorter than average include an early planting date, lack of rainfall, a check and check in the state of Illinois, a lot of the Corn Belt for the better part of the growing season through mid-June. Here's what Nafziger was thinking June the 13th.
I don't think we've lost a great deal of yield potential yet in the corn crop. Some of the positives are the really good color that most of the crop has. If we watch it during this rapid growth phase, when the crop goes from waist high to head high, maybe in a week, this is what makes us feel good about the growth rate. I don't think that rate is quite as high this year as it would normally be, simply because it's been hard for the crop to extract enough water to get that to happen. But the fact that the crop still has its leaves out and active through most of the day, if not all of the day, means that it's still doing photosynthesis. And it's photosynthesis that makes this whole system work. and nothing else.
So if the corn crop is short but not rolling its leaves, then it's probably okay. Capturing sunlight is the goal and the yield driver.
There's a lot of concern that stress during early vegetative, mid-vegetative stages, say before the crop is waist high or chest high, you know, really does a number on yield potential. The reality is we've all seen a crop that you can look out across it at the time of pollination and you say this thing can't yield more than 120 bushel, and you can then get rainfall and it ends up yielding 200 plus. So the anecdotal evidence would be that a short growing crop, one that never attains its 8 or 9 feet height that we like to look at and walk through and be proud of, generally has very good yield potential if the kernel numbers are there and the canopy is there after pollination to get them filled.
So the stress of the season so far may not have caused much damage, but things can change very quickly in the field if the rain does not fall and the leaves begin to really roll. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Leonard Seed Service supports agricultural programs as an additional service to its customers. Leonard Seed Service is an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products to farmers throughout East Central Illinois via the Asgrow on-demand bulk soybean handling system. Leonard Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Wednesday afternoon. Tara Oliver with the Andersons Climbers Facility in Delphi, Indiana, is on the phone line to look at the cash grain market. Good afternoon to you, Tara. First, let's talk about condition of the corn crop in your area. Here we got a little rainfall, and it looks pretty decent for Champaign County. Where you are there in Delphi, how does the corn look?
Really, we got a small amount of rain over the weekend. We had really just about a tenth to two-tenths in our area, so we certainly could have used more, but things are starting to see a lot of stress. I mean, despite the heat, we actually have, you know, maintained stands and color fairly well, but this dry weather and the wind conditions that we've had have really started to dry us out, and we're definitely seeing some yield loss this week.
I have a question. I don't know whether you are capable or wanting to ask this, but there are some who would suggest that as we expire another set of contracts, commercials will just stand for delivery and the marketplace will drop. Would the Andersons be in that position?
As far as from a basis standpoint or from...
Yeah, for corn, yes.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're certainly seeing some different things take place in the basis market over here. I mean, with our heavy concentration of ethanol plants, you know, we are starting to see basis walk its way lower. A lot of it, you know, is attributed to that. And a lot of the ethanol margins are staying pretty negative as you look out further into June and July and August. And, you know, that's creating some uncertainty in our area as well.
And your bids for corn are what for the day?
Our cash price at Climbers is $6.64, Delphi $6.51, and then beans are $14.33, and with wheat harvest underway, our cash price is $6.64.
And are the local end users really hunting for soybeans or not at this time?
There's been a little bit. I mean, basis has stayed pretty steady to firm on soybeans, but really haven't seen any, you know, overactivity or anybody get too aggressive for beans here in our area.
All right. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
That's Tara Oliver. She's with the Andersons and joins us here on the Closing Market Report on this Wednesday afternoon. Back in just a couple of minutes with the weather forecast.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
It's National Vanilla Milkshake Day. The milkshake, as first defined in 1885, was an alcoholic whiskey drink containing eggs. It was not until the turn of the 20th century that milkshakes became wholesome drinks made with ice cream. By the way, the history of the electric blender and milkshake are interconnected. Before the widespread availability of electric blenders, milkshakes were more like eggnog. On this day in agricultural history in 1861, Sir Frederick Gowland Hopkins was born. He discovered what we now call vitamins, essential nutrients needed to maintain health. Hopkins fed young rats a basic diet containing salts and a purified mixture of lard and starch. After some time, Hopkins observed the animals stopped growing. The addition of milk to the lard and starch diet induced growth. In 1920, Dmitry Ivanovsky died, a Russian microbiologist. He was the first to identify the characteristics of organisms that later were named viruses. Ivanovsky was commissioned in 1890 to study a mysterious disease that was killing tobacco crops. He determined that something in the sap transferred the disease from plant to plant. And after more research, he concluded an invisible parasite was the culprit. And in 1977, the Trans-Alaska Oil Pipeline fully opened. It takes oil 38 days to travel 800 miles from the oil fields to the port of Valdez. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Wednesday afternoon. Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City is here as usual. Thanks, Drew, for taking the time with us today. We appreciate that. Tell me about the weather here in the Midwest. Producers have had a little rainfall over the weekend in some parts of the Corn Belt, others not so much. They'd like another rainfall all the way across the Corn Belt. Nonetheless, can you promise them one at some time in the near future or not?
Well, I guess we have to be careful how we define a rain event anymore. I think we've got two opportunities for some rain to move across the Midwest. But to be honest with you, neither one of them produces a large volume of rainfall for the region, and we will continue with the dry bias that we've got playing out right now. The first disturbance that comes through the region is our cool front that's breaking down the high pressure ridge. All the heat that we've got out there today will become a thing of the past as the cool front comes across. We'll probably pick up on rain totals running from a couple tenths of an inch upwards to three quarters of an inch across a fair amount of the Midwest. That's better than nothing, I suppose, but a lot of the rain amounts will probably be under a half inch, and that's not all that great. You know, we'll lose that much with one day or 2 days the most of evaporation. So we're not going to do a whole lot, but the crop that's pollinating out there will certainly benefit from that little bit of moisture and will help them. But we do need a follow-up event of greater significance. That next system will be a reinforcing shot of cool air that will come across the Midwest. And that is expected to occur as we go from Sunday into Monday. And unfortunately, the amount of rain that comes with that event is going to be a few hundredths of an inch to maybe a quarter of an inch, and that's about as good as it gets. And temperatures should be quite nippy when we get into the early to middle part of next week, especially in the eastern portions of the region, Michigan down to Ohio and over to Pennsylvania. Those areas probably see some temperatures in the 70s, maybe even a couple of upper 60-degree highs possible on one day during the middle part of next week. In the meantime, the ridge of high pressure will be shifting out into the plains. The western Corn Belt will see a warmer bias, not much in the way of precipitation for a little while. But as we move on into the second week of the forecast, the opportunity for showers and thunderstorms seems to improve somewhat across portions of the region. I don't want to make any promises I can't keep, but there will be at least an opportunity for a little more rain than what we're going to see in the first week. And maybe it'll be a little bit more relieving for the bulk of the crop, which will be approaching that pollination period.
As we have talked in the past, there was some discussion that there was a change in the pattern. Is this the beginning of that? And does that mean July might be better than June in terms of rainfall events?
I think that is correct. The changes are not going to be real dramatic, though. But what we're going to do is we're going to quit putting a high-pressure ridge over the eastern part of the country, and instead we'll put it in the plains, maybe in the Rocky Mountain region once in a while, and that will create an upper air flow pattern that's more northwesterly instead of southwesterly, and so we will end up with cooler temperatures coming down periodically. Both the northern and eastern parts of the Midwest will see that, and we'll also have an opportunity for rainfall as long as we can keep tropical systems out of the Gulf of Mexico. That's been our biggest problem here in this current week to 10-day forecast, is we have a tropical system in the Gulf, and it is keeping the Gulf of Mexico closed as a moisture source, so we can't get the moisture to come up in the Midwest. Once we clear out the tropics, we should do a lot better with getting some moisture flowing northward, and with the cool shots of air coming along, yeah, I think we will see a little bit more rainfall in July. Not necessarily soaking, but a lot better than what it's been.
Thank you so much, Drew. We appreciate it.
You bet. Have a good day.
Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. That wraps up this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. You have a great afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason.